and welcome to Froppy, home of the fun, frivolous, low-brow froth that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're of course joined by me, Elle, a London-based 28-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect, and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Hello, hello, how are you all? How is everybody doing? I hope you've had a lovely week. I'd like to just say that if you can hear next door's chickens or the wild parakeets of London, I can only apologise. Everybody's being very loud this morning, and I'm recording before work just to try and get some nice daylight in these shots. So if you can hear the morning chorus, I am incredibly sorry, but I can't work out how to make them any quieter without locking myself in some sort of dungeon, and I don't have access to one, so we're not going to do that. But that aside, we're going to ignore that. We're going to move on because there's been quite a lot going on this week, so we're going to dive right in with the best of the brain rot, which are the silly stories that got us talking this week. Our first story is something that I don't think you'll have been able to escape if you live in the UK. If you don't, and the vast majority if you actually don't, then you might not have heard. But this is the news that 45 claims made against Greg Wallace have been upheld in a recent report. And this is the report that has come at the end of a 7-month investigation into claims made against Greg about inappropriate sexual language and unwelcome physical contact. The investigation was originally started when 13 people last year made claims about Greg that covered a 17-year period. But what has sort of been a bit heartbreaking about this, if I'm going to be entirely honest, is that once this investigation started, they ended up speaking to 78 witnesses, 41 of whom were complainants, and eventually 83 allegations were made against Greg. So these are really pretty big numbers. And the most shocking part is that 45 were upheld. So that's more than half of these claims were perceived to have enough evidence and enough backing to be seen as completely accurate and truthful. Which, the fact that this has happened over 17 years, I still struggle to wrap my head around, because how the hell was this not stopped earlier? The BBC have confirmed that they missed opportunities to deal with this behaviour earlier than it was dealt with. And they've also said that their working relationship with Greg is no more. They have fully cut ties with him, which is pretty mammoth, because he was the face of two of their relatively big shows, one being MasterChef, which has obviously gone on for decades, and the other one being Inside the Factory, which had a bit of a cult following, or certainly I perceive it as having a bit of a cult following. I think among the people in my life who are 55 plus, I don't know what it is about the show, but they do enjoy it. It's got a bit of history. You're going to sort of have a bit of a nose behind the scenes. Maybe it's that. Either way, Greg has been cut from both and all future BBC work. Many of the claims upheld against him did relate to language and humour, but there were also a small number relating to, as the report put it, being in a state of undress, which just makes me feel incredibly icky. Greg has admitted that he has used inappropriate language, and in a statement made after the report was published, did say that he was very sorry. He also shared that he'd recently been diagnosed as autistic and said, "A late autism diagnosis has helped me understand how I communicate and how I'm perceived. I'm still learning." And I think this has been met with a slightly mixed reaction, partly because one of the standalone allegations that was made and upheld related to racist language. And I think people get very uncomfortable when you bring racism and humour into the same conversation. So autism diagnosis or not, I think people are raising eyebrows slightly. It's actually quite a big knock to MasterChef that this allegation was upheld, because its other main presenter, John Turode, has recently confirmed that it's been alleged that he also used racist language, although on an Instagram statement, he's claiming to have no memory of the incident. This has had such conversation around it, these allegations made against Greg, that the UK government has also got involved. Our culture secretary, Lisa Nandy, said the allegations were horrendous and appalling and backed the BBC ending their working relationship with Greg. And the chair of the Commons Culture, Media and Sport Committee said there'd been a long-standing failure to protect people against unacceptable workplace behaviour. What's interested me most about this story is that the BBC have also said that they do have a series of MasterChef that they filmed last year before these allegations came out, but haven't broadcast yet, I think partly because of this investigation. And so they're sat on a series of MasterChef with Greg Wallace in, but aren't quite sure what to do with it, and they haven't made a decision whether or not they will be releasing it yet. That surprises me, because it's been acknowledged and agreed that this man was predatory and assaulted women in the workplace, and the BBC have made a very strong stance in saying, we don't agree with that, that's not us, our working relationship has ended. But they've only gone halfway by being sat on this TV show that they're not sure whether or not they are going to put out. I feel shows that they've not quite decided if they're fully against Greg or if they do want to still use him to entertain the masses and try and put him out there to benefit from him. You know, you put entertaining people on the TV so that you attract the viewers, so that you keep that audience, and that's where your revenue comes from. So they're still thinking about relying on him to make money, and that doesn't follow through. I think if you've acknowledged that the person that you put in this situation is a predator and you don't work with him anymore, you can't go, well, yes, he is awful, but actually, isn't he shiny and lovely, and don't you want to be entertained by him, and can't you just watch him for another 8 or 9 hours, however long the series is, and ooh and ah and agree with him or disagree with him about what he thinks about this custard tart. I think it's a really odd decision to have said they're not sure what to do with it yet, unless of course there's a legal issue where contractually they've got to put it out because the contestants on the show were promised a certain amount of airtime. I have absolutely no idea. But if I was in their PR, HR, comms side of their office, I would be advising against it, because I think the reputational damage is far greater than any financial damage they would take by having invested in the show and then not obviously reaping the rewards of the show when they put it into programming later this year. There's of course always the conversation they could put it straight onto iPlayer, so those who want to watch it can go and watch it and those who don't, don't. But I feel it's a blurry middle ground that doesn't really, again, doesn't give them the backbone and the credit of sticking with the correct decision of ending this working relationship. I mean, let me know what you think. Maybe iFair is the right choice, but I fundamentally disagree currently. I think the whole series should just be binned. The contestants apologise too, maybe given some, I don't know, therapy, depending on how he treated them. And then we move on with new hosts. I think it's the only way forward. Our second story is more of a public service announcement as opposed to an actual story itself. And this is the news that Lena Dunham's Too Much has been released on Netflix. If you don't know who Lena is, she is an American writer and, in my mind, one of the best creatives in the film and TV industry currently, and I'd argue has been for the last 10 years. The way she writes and the characters she produces and creates are exceptional. They are so multi-layered, there's not a one-dimensional one amongst them. They are both the people you know and yourself, like, so realistic while also obviously being slight caricatures, because how could they not be? It's a TV show. And you both hate and love them and are frustrated by them, and I'm not going to carry on rambling. I've obviously got such an admiration for Lena. But she created the film Girls when she was in her early 20s. If you've not seen Girls, it's so worth your time. It obviously has its issues. There's often conversation around the lack of diversity in the show, and I think that's absolutely fair enough. I've never been to America, but let's be honest, I know it's not full of just white people. And if it obviously it's set in New York, if New York is anything like London, then diversity is absolutely everywhere, and it almost feels peculiar if there isn't any. So I can understand why that was so heavily criticised at the time, or why it continues to be a criticism. But the show itself is a work of art, and so accurate to its time and so reflective of being that age in New York in those years, that I'm very excited that we now have a London version effectively. Obviously it's not Girls, because Girls was very of the time, but Lena now lives in London, the show is based in London, and it's about American moving over and kind of adjusting, and the little quirks that kind of make Londoners or make Americans stick out in London, or in the UK, I'd argue, actually, in the best ways. The show itself, it's called Too Much, and that's very much based apparently on the fact that Lena's British husband points out when she is sometimes being too much in a loving way and in a way that says, you know, almost like you're American is showing currently. I've been assured based on Lena's press tour that is said lovingly, and it's more just showing when the cultural differences are there, despite the fact we both speak the same language while also really not speaking the same language. I'm rambling. I am going to stop in a minute. And I acknowledge that I will not land this plane for this new story, but I am just very excited to have her writing back on our screens. I don't watch a lot of TV, but it's something I'm going to be making some time for. And if you're not interested in the film or the show whatsoever, what I would say is please make some time to go and check out her press tour and the interview she is doing around Too Much, because whoever is dressing her, or if she's dressing herself, is doing a phenomenal job. She looks incredible, and I want half the outfits I've seen her in, if not all of them. Our third story comes as probably absolutely no surprise to anybody, and this is the news that Justin Bieber released a surprise album last week. It's his seventh, it's titled Swag, and it is definitely more of like an R&B sound compared to his earlier albums, which I think heavily sat in the camp of pop. The album is made up of 21 tracks, but not all of them are songs. There's a couple of sort of like voice note-esque clips within there. One, for example, Standing on Business, is about 40 seconds long, and it seems to have just been an audio clipped from a much wider recording session where Justin and a member of his team are just talking about how you say standing on business and whether you fully pronounce the word business or not. It's about as gripping as that, so you know, not hugely gripping, but I guess it adds to the whole vibe of the album in general. Reviews have been incredibly blunt, quite savage, a little mixed, but savage enough that I would feel really quite miffed if they were talking about me and my work. Interestingly though, these have obviously come from critics and professional reviewers, and his sixth album, which came out in 2021, so 4 years ago now, which was titled Justice, was I think similarly criticised by critics when it first came out. The Guardian called it a forgettable generic pop album. But then this album, Justice, did spend 2 weeks at the number one spot on the Billboard 200 that year. So I think what critics do and don't like and what fans do and don't like are two very different things. To give you a taste of what has been said about it by the professionals, The Telegraph gave it 2 stars, saying that, and I'm quoting here, it's not a return of a pop titan, and described it as an uncomfortable, unfiltered cry for help, which is harsh. The Independent also gave it 2 stars, called it God-fearing, hypersexual slog, and an unfortunate insight into a man who seems awkwardly caught between sex, God, and self-pity. The Guardian were a smidge more generous and gave it 3 stars, but said that while it's very considered, cleverly nostalgic, and subtly satisfying, lyrically, it isn't such a classy and thoughtful affair, and that you would struggle to find much evidence of a three-dimensional human being in his lyrics, which are low on specifics, insight, and originality. Which is quite cutting. On the flip side, Clash magazine gave it 7 out of 10 and called it an impressive return from the pop icon. So a real mix. Personally, it's not for me, but that is okay. Not everything is for everybody. I think the general consensus has been that this is very much a passion project. And because of that, I think that kind of explains why we have these sort of voice note style, not even voice note, but like, and I don't want to call them afterthoughts or add-ons either, but these short little interlude talking tracks that break up the album. It's obviously been done before, and you know, Justin's not the first to add this kind of stuff onto an album. And I think it must have therefore been done sort of very consciously and cleverly. So a lot of work and thought has gone into the album. But I think maybe it's one that's going to grow on me. I'm not quite sure. He did, of course, sing about Haley and One, and even mentioned Road and the Road phone case and the iconic lip gloss holder and all of that. And I think that's interesting. I think it does give a slight sort of, you know, he sings about her positively. The relationship comes across as loving and stable, which obviously is interesting given how often that couple are in the news cycle because there's rumours about them splitting or breaking up and the slightly odd things that Justin posts on Instagram about it all. I'm not sure if this album will help that conversation anyway. either by confirming or denying those rumours. I don't think that was his goal whatsoever. I don't think the rumours maybe worry him as much as they maybe would other people in the public eye. Obviously, Hailey did recently step out without her wedding ring on, but then very quickly posted on Instagram with it on again. I don't know. I'm not sure they know. But yeah, and I think that's quite the backdrop to have an album come out, and maybe that's why there was no sort of press. Obviously, releasing an album surprising, like, as a surprise is being tried and tested before. I think Beyonce first did it in, like, 2013, and the popularity and success of that have meant that this is quite a regular occurrence now for artists, in the same way that, like, an Instagram wipe is as well. So I don't know if we can say that this is a surprise simply as a throwback to the Beyonce-style album drop, or more as a way to sort of just not bother fighting the current conversation around Justin and Hailey. Whatever, no, I don't think it particularly matters. The album has come out, and I think fans will just be excited there is music coming from Justin once more. Our fourth and final story is something that has just made me laugh, and I therefore wanted to bring it to the podcast. And this is the ongoing evolution of JoJo Siwa. This started obviously earlier this year, around the time she joined, or she was in the Big Brother house, and has continued on. We obviously have talked about JoJo on the pod before, so I'm not going to rehash that. But as part of her new life, I want to say, she is releasing a cover, or has released a cover, of the 1980s song Betty Davis Eyes. If you don't know the song, I'm not going to sing it for you because I don't have that kind of talent, but you can definitely look it up on YouTube, and I suspect you will recognise it once you've heard the first, I don't know, 30 seconds of it or so. This is a song that she first covered a couple of months back at her first UK show post Big Brother. So to remind you, JoJo was in the UK Big Brother house earlier this year. She was one of the finalists, I believe, so I can't quite remember now. And she's obviously American, so came over for the show, went back to America, and then came back over to do some shows in the UK. She's obviously a singer, performer, dancer, whatever you want to call her. And during her first show, she covered the song Betty Davis Eyes, but swapped the lyrics Betty Davis for Chris Hughes. I'm not sure it quite fits in terms of syllables, but she made it work. And this kind of blew up, because not only is it a completely different sound to her usual gay pop icon, just like fabulousness, it was also taken as like slight confirmation that she was seeing Chris Hughes, because who was obviously her castmate, her showmate, whatever you want to call it, on Big Brother. And he did attend this show and stood with her mum in the background, and this was around the time all those rumours were taking place of whether or not they were dating. They obviously have now come out and confirmed they're dating, but either way, this song was a big moment in JoJo's musical career, I guess you could say, certainly her career over the last 8 to 12 months or so. And as a result, I think she saw how much fans enjoyed it and thought, well, this is a song I need to cover, and has done so, and is in the process of releasing a music video for this cover. And I won't lie, guys, I mean, it's not my kind of go-to, and I don't think I'll be listening to the cover either, but the comment section of her Instagram reel has had me in tears. People have not held back, so I'm going to read you a few. One commenter said, "JoJo, don't take this personally, please, but I hate it." Another one said, "Is embarrassment your kink?" Somebody else asked, "What the trad wife is going on right now?" And then there was also sort of some comments pointing out the fact that JoJo's backing track to this Betty Davis Eyes cover is heavily auto-tuned. There's a very obvious, like, robotic sound to it. So we had some comments including, "Your audio engineer, auto-tune engineer needs to be fired. Please stop. And I don't want to hear about this anymore." People have not held back whatsoever. And bless JoJo, she is ploughing ahead. I have not seen the cover in full yet. What I would say is it is a different sound. She has really sort of built up the huskiness of her voice to, I guess, copy the original. Though I now can't remember what Betty Davis Eyes sounds like, and whether or not the original singer, whose name I've completely forgotten, did sound particularly husky. Either way, really flipping funny. JoJo, I don't think, minds, so I don't think it matters that we're having a laugh at her expense either, because, well, not even her expense, because I suspect she's somewhat in on the joke. She would have known what she was doing. And I think she's in such an aggressive love bubble with Chris Hughes that I think for her it's just some sort of act of love. And you know what? I've never had a man or woman re-record a 1980s song for me. So Chris Hughes is doing better than some of us. And now, of course, it's time for Pop to Pin, which is something I shallow dove this week and I'm hoping to come back to. Last week, I popped a pin on Mia McKenna Bruce's interview on the podcast that I thought was called 30 and Thriving. I now think it's called Thriving Minds, but either way, if you look up Mia McKenna Bruce 30 and Thriving, this interview will come up. It's hosted by Alberto Zandi, so you'll know if you found the right thing because he'll be there. And I loved this interview. It was a smidge stilted in parts. I'm not sure if that was the editing or just a slightly like lack of conversational flow, but I still really enjoyed it. Mia comes across incredibly honest and really quite self-aware, and it's the first time I think I've actually seen or heard her interviewed. She obviously has done many interviews before, like this woman is a BAFTA winner. BAFTA? I think it's a BAFTA. Anyway, she is very well covered and incredibly good at her job and therefore isn't a stranger to press, but I just, for whatever reason, have not quite engaged with it before, I think it's fair to say. But I loved it. I think it's worth your time. I think if you don't know Mia, it'll definitely warm you to her. I think if you do know of Mia, it'll definitely confirm why you are a fan of her work. I'm going to link it in the show notes. And yeah, I'm not going to rave about it too much more, but what I would say, one thing that stuck with me that I really enjoyed from her was the phrase, "Don't let yourself get this far to only come this far." And I don't know, I found it quite inspirational. I've not heard it before. I'm sure many of you have, but I'm going to try and bring that into my life a bit more because it is, yeah, it's a nice thing to remind yourself of. And then something I've popped a pin in this week, guys, is just totally lowbrow and kind of stupid. And this is the fact that I have fallen down the rabbit hole of BSL interpreters at pop concerts or concerts in general, and the videos that go up on things like TikTok when these interpreters have to sign incredibly explicit lyrics. The people who book these jobs, like these interpreters, are just incredible. They commit above and beyond to the necessary. You cannot fault their work and their dedication. They're effectively dancers on stage with the way they sort of throw their hips about as they're using their hands to sign the lyrics. And I'm obsessed. I love it. It seems to be several have done sort of the concert circuit this year, so they've popped up at like Glastonbury and then they've popped up at like Olivia Rodrigo and then they'll be down at like the O2 the next week type thing. And I didn't know it was a job. Had I known it was a job, hey, maybe I wouldn't be doing this and writing. Maybe I would instead be throwing my ass around and signing away because it looks like such a fun time. Although I'm not sure I've got the confidence now I say it, but you know, give me a drink and maybe. Or, you know, just hype me up enough and maybe I would. But either way, the BBC have interviewed one of these interpreters. Her name is Claire Edwards, and she recently signed for Olivia Rodrigo, Guns N' Roses, and Clean Bandit this summer. So the woman is booked and busy. And I've not had a chance to read the article yet, but I'm going to. And then I'm going to come back and tell you whether or not it's worth your time or whether, you know, you just stick at the surface level and just enjoy the videos that go around. But I'm excited. And then, of course, we've got some recommendations because it wouldn't be a frothy episode without them. My first rec is a face sun cream. It's Boots. It's their brand Sultan. And I love it. It comes in like a silvery bronze tube. That is not a very helpful description. It's kind of their once brand. The idea being, I think you put it on once and then you're set to go for 8 hours. Obviously, you could reapply if you wanted to. But this stuff I use daily, especially at the moment in the sunny weather, and it does not break me out. It doesn't leave me too shiny. I put powder over the top because I just don't like being shiny in general, but it's not very heavy. It doesn't make me look particularly pale, and it does its job. You know, I have yet to burn a cheek or a nose or my ears or anything of the sort, so I can't recommend it enough. I also think it smells really flipping good, but I grew up with Boots Sultan sun cream and I think I'm just hooked on the smell. So maybe you won't like it, but if you are looking for a new sun cream that isn't too expensive, I recommend this one. It also goes up to 50 plus for a sun protection factor. And I don't know, I think it's your face. I think it's well worth having that extra protection just to, you know, fight the appearance of wrinkles and fine lines, because none of us want to age quicker than we already are. And then, of course, as we all know, I'm on my journey to becoming a women's football fan, and I am trying my best with this. And something that caught my eye and that I enjoyed reading and think you will too is an article that British Vogue did with Jess Carter and Anne Catherine Berger, who are both female footballers and recently got engaged, which I absolutely loved. It's a really just sort of sweet, fun read. But what I think is absolutely incredible, and I hadn't realised, is that this pair have managed to play at three professional clubs together. So they kind of travel around the football circuit together. And I think that I am impressed they've managed to swing that. How much longer they'll be able to, I have absolutely no idea. But I love how dedicated they are both to their sport and their relationship, and they've managed to tie the two together. I actually can't tell you what teams they play for. I think one might be American and one is British. I could be wrong. I believe they played for Chelsea, but again, I'm now fumbling and cannot remember any details about these footballers. But I enjoyed the article, and you know, we're dipping our toe in. We're trying to build that sort of camaraderie with the girls, the women, the team. So I'm trying, and it's a great first step, I think. So I'm going to leave the article link in the show notes, and hopefully you will enjoy it too. If you got this far, thank you so, so much. As always, guys, this is a small independent podcast, and I really appreciate the support. So please do tell a friend or subscribe so you're the first to know when next week's episode drops. It really helps Frothy in the charts. If you like what you hear, you can, of course, find more nonsense on Instagram and TikTok at Frothy Podcast. And I hope to see you next week. Have a lovely week, guys. Bye. I'm not the one who's always right.